Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of the Comic Chronicle Podcast. I'm your guys' host, Dakota Morgan, coming to you guys from Phoenix, Arizona. We have a very fun episode for you guys today, or this week, depending on whenever you're listening, you know, all that time, space, mumbo jumbo. Well, Scott Buon Cristiano is on the show, right? We got Scott, he's on the show today. He's worked on the Angel books, he's worked on other comics, he's doing a secret project at Image right now. You know, he's an artist who's done so many cool things, such a cool aesthetic. We got him on the show. We talk about being an artist, you know, tackling the stuff of the modern day world, you know, doing what you love. We talk about his work. We talk about a lot of motivational and inspirational stuff to artists, no matter what you do, writing, you draw, you build, whatever it may be. Scott and I talk about it and give you guys some really good advice. We also geek out about Conan for a little bit too, but hey, needless to say, and you know, I love crafting and stuff as well. So hopefully you guys enjoy this episode. You get some very good tidbits out of it. And I do got to ask, if you guys like the show, subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or comiccronicle.podbean.com. It helps us out greatly if you really do subscribe on there and leave a review and maybe share the show. Hashtag the Comic Chronicle Podcast on Instagram or Twitter, or hashtag Comic Chronicle. Share the show, folks. It helps us do way cool things if you guys do. Thanks for tuning in. And as always, enjoy the show. And now my talk with Scott. All right. And we are recording. Scott, man, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, of course. It's one of those where I saw your work on the Angel books, and then I also saw your Instagram, and I think it was like, I saw it, it was like one of the, like, well, if you follow this person, check out this person. And I saw your work, Scott, and oh my God, I fell in love. I got, not even kidding you.
Thank you.
Of course. And like, it's one of those, I looked at it, I'm like, oh my God, I gotta get this guy on the show, because you have such a great aesthetic and great certain, like, I'm drawing a blank on the words here, and as a writer, that's stupid, I know, but, you know, it's one of the, it's a good aesthetic, like, you're really noticeable, and you really stand out among the others, I think.
Well, that's a good thing. I mean, there's so many incredible people out there, you know, it's like, it's tough to stand apart, but, you know, I think over time that just develops naturally, that aesthetic, you know.
It's true. Like, you find your, I think, I've had people say it on the show before, it's like, once you find your groove and what you're really good at, and you want to work upon that, like, you keep rolling with it. And you did, and it's kind of neat.
Yeah, it's funny, too, because for a while I was, like, when I mean, I haven't been doing this very long, but when I was first starting out, I was kind of trying to draw and like develop my style to what I thought people wanted to see. And then at some point along the way I got pretty frustrated, and I was just like, all right, fuck it, I'm just gonna draw what I want to draw and how I want to draw. And then I started, you know, I actually got more successful from doing that, which I've heard that that's kind of the way it goes.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, you just say, ah, fuck it, and then you find your true self, like, ah, fuck this. Oh,
yeah,
that's
exactly.
It. Yeah. Oh, I 100% vouch for that one. It's like, eh, fuck it, we can't do nothing. I can't do it right. Like, oh, wait a minute here. Now that mine's clear, oh, let's do this thing. It's like, yeah. Well, I gotta ask, man, is like, how did you get started in art? Because I always like hearing people's origin stories. I say all the time on the show, origin stories kind of help out other people listening, and then also the person telling them themselves.
I think I have a pretty unorthodox origin story, I think. So, I mean, I drew, I was always, like, doing artsy stuff when I was younger. I'm 42 now, almost, or 42 or 43, something like that, whatever. So, when I was younger, I drew a lot, like, all through elementary school and high school and stuff like that, and then like applied to art colleges, got denied, and then I was like, all right, well, I'll just, you know, go into restaurant business. So I didn't draw at all for about 20 years. Like, I really only picked up drawing again when I was 36 or something like that. And since then it's just like, I was bartender, and then I, like, managed a liquor store, and I was also helping a friend out who is an amazing artist, my friend Dan McCarthy, and he runs a printmaking shop. So I was helping him out part-time, learning silk screening and print art printing, and we'd talk about it more. And then I was like, you know, I'd start to doodle a little bit more. And then I started getting, like, a gig poster job here and there, and I was like, oh, cool, I can make some extra money. So anyway, the job started building up, and I finally quit my day job, and then, and that was about 5 years ago. So since then, I've just been going like 7 days a week, 10 hours a day, really no breaks, just drawing every single day to kind of make up for lost time. So I'm still learning everything on the fly.
Well, that is an amazing story, though. I mean, you're like, okay, I'm going to do this. No, let me take a break here. But then you get all this knowledge of stuff. You kind of do your own thing for a little bit, but then you come back, you hit it hard, which, that's 7 days a week. I applaud you, Scott, because Jesus Christ, I work a day job and work six other jobs in the arts, so it's like, I couldn't even imagine.
I mean, it's different. The thing is, you know, I think from working for, I mean, I was a hard worker. I've always had a really good work ethic, and working for other people, you know, as hard as I did in the past, it didn't make any sense to work less hard when I was working for myself. Mm-hmm. You know, I was like, I have to put my all into it. And again, like we touched on earlier, there's so many good people out there that, you know, and it's such a, you know, subjective thing, the arts in general, and you can't really control what people are going to gravitate towards or like. They may hate you or whatever, and the only thing I have any control over is how much work I put into it, like how hard I work. That's the only thing I can control, so 7 days a week it is.
But you're doing what you love, though, now, you know?
Like, oh, yeah.
That's it. Like, and you're going at it hard, which I love with the passion to hear about. I mean, like, make the jokes all you want, but it's like, you go upon it, you start, you just go for it, and you're like, shit, you worked at you managed at the liquor store. I don't know how the hell you're like, I want to still create. After that, I'd be like, I'm done with life.
Yeah, you know, and it was strange because, you know, I kind of had the thought while I was taking a few illustration jobs here and there while still working full-time at the liquor store, you know, it was kind of the idea of, you know, if I wanted art or illustration to be my job, I had to treat it like that. So when I was done with the liquor store, I'd come home and then I'd work 5 hours just drawing. And it wasn't necessarily for jobs, for paying gigs or anything. It was just, I was like, I have to pretend that this is something that I have to, you know, clock in for and do. And I think it paid off.
I would say so. But yeah. So I think it should be something to tell people is, you know, work and still work with the same ethic that you have the job. I've never heard of that before, but I love it with a passion because it's so helpful. As a guy who works in film too, on like prop making and stuff like that, we're not always getting jobs, especially here in Arizona. And you know, as a writer, not always getting jobs and stuff like that. So it's tough. And so you're just like, oh man, what's the point? It's not really doing anything. And you get stuck in that mentality, you know, that mentality of like, well, what's it fucking for? No, it's for the future. Like, you got to practice, you got to keep going at it.
Yeah.
That's brilliant. I've never thought about it that way. Practice like it's a real gig.
There's a million things to do. Even, you know, when I was managing a restaurant, if I saw the wait staff just wandering around aimlessly, I'd be like, you know, clear a table, have plates in your hand, bring them to the dishwasher, you know, like, do something. So, you know, like, when I didn't have jobs, I'd just be drawing. There's always skills to develop. There's days where I just spend drawing, you know, stuff that I am not good at drawing, but I know I need to be practicing, or, you know, just there's always something to do, learning whatever, you know. It's endless, the amount of stuff that you can learn, and it's constant kind of work in progress.
That's true. And it kind of comes full circle to the liquor store, because you had your art printed on beer cans.
Yeah.
It's like, what?
Yeah, that was funny. That was a kind of a recent gig that I did. But, you know, I was in I had a unique perspective on it, because for so many years, like, people buy based on labels, you know, so I knew kind of what stood out on the shelves. So I took that kind of knowledge and applied it to what I do now. People buy a beer based on a fancy tap handle in a bar, you know, they're like, oh, that one looks cool. I'll get that.
This is true.
Yeah. You know, so I applied it to that. And the brewery that I worked for was super happy. And I guess they're selling a bunch of stuff based on, you know, the fact that the art does stand out.
It's metal as hell, basically. Yeah, it's like, oh, it's awesome. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm 100% agreeing with you. Not blowing you or anything like that, but I'm telling you the truth because right now in my workshop, I have a Star Trek beer and a Deadpool beer. So that should immediately throw on the shelf. Like, this should immediately tell you, it's true. Like, oh, God, there's some stuff like you look at us. I go to a store and be like, well, that thing has Voodoo Guy on it. I'm really digging that.
Yeah, I mean, that's how it goes. Like, you know, obviously, that's the initial thing that will drag a customer in. It's you know, it is judging a book by its cover. You know, they buy it based on the thing, and if it's a good product, then they stay and they keep buying it. Yep. But that initial thing that makes people pull the product off the shelf and buy it is the label.
It's true. Oh, God, yeah. Well, it's kind of like when comics, like, that cover means the world, and that cover's like, what are you going to do for that? Or, like, the movie poster. That movie poster's going to bring in the people. It's a whole marketing thing with it, and, you know, the Instagram post, I realized it through that, learned all about that stuff, and been learning about marketing under an apprenticeship for a little bit. Apprentice. There we go. Words. It's a weird world we live in where your whole thing could be sold. Like, even the books. Like, they're like, well, we got this poster out. And they're like, oh, that poster sucks. We don't want it. Or the films and the poster's out. And it's like, well, that poster sucks. And yet it could be an incredibly good movie. Like, am I sold on the Gremlins poster that they put out for the new cartoon coming to Netflix, I think it is? No, not on the poster. But am I sold on the idea? Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, there's good movies with bad posters and bad movies with amazing posters, you know, but I think it shows a good label or a good book cover, or comic cover, or movie poster kind of represents the taste that the, you know, whether it's a brewery or company or story writer or whatever, you know, it kind of represents their thing. Like, they you know, look for a specific illustrator or artist who does a certain thing that fits in with their vibe or whatever. So, you know, I think it does reflect on the company themselves, you know, because ultimately they're the ones paying these people to create this stuff for them, so they do have input on it.
It's true. I think basically to sum it all up is art shapes the world.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it keeps it moving, keeps it going and stuff. And one thing I gotta ask you, man, is it's probably a question you get asked a lot, but I have to ask, is like, are you a horror / Lovecraftian fan?
Horror, no. You know what? I'm not really.
Why?
I mean, you would think. I mean, I'm super into Downton Abbey. And, you know,
that's a good show, I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah, it's my favorite. Lovecraft stuff. I'm not a huge reader. I like horror movies sometimes. You would think, based on the stuff that I draw, that I'm just like totally crazy horror nut or whatever, but really not.
Wow, that throws me, that like smacks me across the face because I'm like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, I know.
Well, like, where does it come from then? Like, is it one of those scenes where it's like, well, I kind of like the aesthetic of it a little bit, or is it one of those scenes it just kind of feels right to you to draw in this sort of style?
You know, I don't know. I just, when I start drawing, that's what I kind of gravitate towards. I think as far as the Lovecraftian stuff, I think that is kind of born out of where I live and grew up, which is Cape Cod, Massachusetts. It's like this kind of island peninsula cape off the far east coast of New England. So we're in the water. I mean, it's basically an island. So, and Lovecraft was in Providence, Rhode Island, which is state right below. It's, you know, 45 minutes south of us.
Real close.
Yeah, so when you're on the coast, in the water, you see weird stuff. Like, there's just... And when you observe the ocean, just kind of the sheer power of it and the darkness of it, and your mind starts to get weird, and you start to, you're like, oh my god, I wonder, then maybe there is just giant unknown creature under there. So I think, I'm guessing what kind of influenced him, which would be the ocean, has kind of rubbed off on me, as far as that, you know, the
mystery, the mystery sort of thing to it, like the thrills and the imagination of it, which is beautiful. It's so amazing, and I think it's like because the oceans are like man's biggest fear, other than a nuke, of course. But because you just don't know. Like immediately when you're given that description, my mind immediately went to the art piece on there, and I don't remember who did it. I don't know how old it is either, but there's like a wooden sail ship. It's on top of the water, and it's a side view, and it goes down like hundreds of feet. And below, like, the monsters are jam-packed underneath the boat. And it's, like, all these serpents, these octopus things, these weird-looking things. But they're, like, just crammed in this thing. But they don't break the top of the water, though. And the ship doesn't even think they're there. But instead, there's all these things, and they're looking at the ship.
Yeah.
Oh.
I mean, if you... Because we'll go over to... there's two islands that are off the coast, Nantucket and Martha's Vineyard. Mm. You take the ferry over there for the day or whatever, and, you know, you're just in this boat kind of in the middle of the ocean, and it's so dark and cold, and you're just like, there's so much stuff under there. Sometimes, you know, you see a humpback whale breach, or you'll see a pod of dolphins and seals and weird stuff, and you're like, that's only the stuff we're seeing right now. Yeah. There's even more creepy weirdness down deeper.
Oh yeah, there's so many possibilities with that. Like, and I love how now we're exploring that in movies all of a sudden. Like, every now and then we'll have like those waves, pun intended, of I can make one dad joke a week. I've now made my one. But is, you know, there's one coming out. Christian Stewart's actually in it too, and it's like they're mining underwater, and this thing pops out. No idea what it looks humanoid from the trailers, and don't know what the hell it is. Like, and then we had Meg come out recently. You got all these things of like, yeah, the ocean is filled with these things. And, you know, as a guy who worked in paleontology, before I did film and comics and all this sort of stuff here, I did paleontology on the side for a couple of years, like two. And I got to work on underwater creatures, dinosaurs, and Ice Age creatures. And let me tell you, just even in the past, it's scary as shit what was underneath the water. Like, it's rough. It's nuts.
Yeah, it is. It's like going to another planet. Like, you see, and just the kind of the biology of the thing, like the things that live in like the Mariana Trench. Oh. You know, like, there's how many hundreds of millions of tons of pressure on them, and they're just like, yeah, all right, well, I'm just gonna move slow and eat bacteria or whatever they eat, you know?
Yeah, or each other.
It's
or
just... Yeah, exactly.
And it's like it's only what we can see with the light too. Like
Yeah, I'm going to have my body produce light. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah. And it's like, I'm going to only produce this one tiny little dot here, and it's going to be right in front of my face. So when you go to it, I will eat you. Like, metal as hell.
Yeah.
It really is.
It's incredible.
Oh, there's so many possibilities with it. And right now, there's all, like, the aquarium fans listening. They're like, yeah, you fools, where you guys been at?
Yeah, I know.
Oh, man. So I guess that really... So did you... Were you born and raised over there, or was it one of those you moved?
Yeah, no, I was born in New Hampshire, lived in Maine until I was like 3 or 4 when my parents split, and then I moved to Cape Cod where my mother grew up. Mm-hmm. But I've been going back and forth from Massachusetts to Maine just for, you know, visitations, but I went to school and grew up on Cape Cod, and then moved away for, 15 years or something. Mm. Lived in Boston, lived in New York, Salem, Massachusetts, I lived in for a little bit. And
that
then
probably affected things.
Yeah, that was fun. That was a wild town, especially around imagine.
Oh my god, I couldn't. Oh.
Yeah, it was a zoo.
Hey folks, Dakota here with a little bit of an ad break for you guys today. Do you guys like reading comics? Obviously, if you listen to the show, you do. What the fuck am I talking about? Then you guys, if you're in Arizona, which a good majority of the fan base is, shout out to the ones in Canada though, you guys can go to Drawn to Comics in Glendale, Arizona, located at 5801 West Glendale Avenue in Glendale, Arizona. I gotta say, folks, I've been going here for a long time now. I've been to a few different comic book stores in Arizona in my 6 years of living here so far, and this may change due to the recording nature, but whatever. So I love going to Drawn to Comics. I really do. Ken, who runs it, is amazing, fucking laid-back dude. He's a wonderful guy. He's been on the show, ladies and gentlemen, before. And it's a really fun place to pick up the book. So Drawn to Comics in Glendale, Arizona. Get yourself a box, you know. Go in, maybe just check it out. It's a fun place to escape into. His work, all the workers there are fucking wonderful folks. They really are. It's just like family at this point, at least they are for me. And it's a fun world to go into. There's collectibles there. There's toys. There's comics. You know, and you just get your box and reserve some books and whatnot. We've had people on the show who've written and drawn comics, you know. Go in and pick up their work, folks. Jesus Christ. It ain't that difficult. So go to Drawn the Comics in Glendale, Arizona, folks. You guys can check them out also on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Thanks, everyone. Now back to the show.
So then I moved back to Cape Cod in 2010.
Okay.
Yeah.
So still, that's still the Upper East Coast. You're going to all these different places. You're seeing all these different things, getting all these different vibes and whatnot. And it's, oh man, it's like a one. It's a true, like, almost artist journey, I would say, that you took of like, well, maybe I'll do it. Like, you kind of had it underlined, but then you went and explored. You saw the world. You saw these different things, these people, you know, and you got all these different things. You pull it in. Then when you finally started again, you're like, okay, I have all these experiences, all these vibes I've been through, being all over that area. Because as I'm from, not from Phoenix, I was born and raised in Midwest Illinois for 16 years. So I get like the different vibes, like the totally different, I say vibes, but there's aesthetics and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And you know, you pull them all together and then you get what you get. And I think that's wonderful thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, you pull in all your kind of visual stuff and your, you know, experiences and
emotions,
lessons that you've learned, and you kind of just, you know, that's what shapes what you do.
That's true. Oh, God, yeah. And I think as an artist, not even just for drawing, it's so helpful for doing it. Like, get out of your comfort zone. And the people, like, this is like a whole, like, informational thing now, I guess, but, like, get out of your comfort zone if you're an artist. You know, you got to explore a little bit, look around, see what you can get inspired by. It's just one of those things.
Yeah.
I've always recommended it to people, but some people don't ever listen to me, so.
Yeah, it's true. You know, it's, I mean, I'm very much a homebody. Like, borderline recluse. So I have to, you know, kind of force myself to get out and observe things, whether it's like, you know, just some doing errands, I'll make sure I drive by the beach and like slow down and just watch seagulls for a minute, or, you know, go on a walk through or a hike with my wife or something, you know, just to get out and get that kind of visual stimuli and just kind of pile on some new data into my brain.
Yeah, you know, stretch the muscles a little bit, stretch out the soul a little bit there. Just keep it going. I love it, man.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
Now, how did you exactly get in the comics? Was it just one of those, like, the thing came down? Because obviously we got to talk about comics a little bit because it's a show. But, like, was it one of those where you just got the call and they're like, hey, we want you to work on a pretty big series, to say the least?
Yeah, it was strange. I mean, when I was younger, I was obsessed with comics. Like, all I wanted to do when I was young was draw comics. I remember just when I was, you know, 8 years old or whatever, just going through my my uncle's old Conan the Barbarian, the John Buscema one, and just staring at the lines and the action and
the Conan muscles,
you know, and just this like you know, just these like kind of fantastic stories, and then it went to, you know, just, I'd take my allowance and my mom would bring me to the comic book store and I'd just get whatever had the coolest covers, and so I was kind of all over the place. And then, you know, so anyway, I was obsessed with comics when I was younger. And then, you know, after I took my 1 year off of art stuff and school and whatever, and that turned into 20 years, you know, I just I lost touch with comics. I didn't know what was going on. And then, so I've been doing my illustration thing, and Jerry Duggan messaged me in, what was that? Last year, actually.
Oh, sure.
Like last March, he messaged me kind of out of the blue. We have a mutual friend, and I guess my friend had shown him my work or something, and he had been following me for a little while, and he messaged me, and he was like, "Hey, I really like your work. Do you like comics? Have you ever wanted to do comic work?" And I was like, "Wow." I was like, "Yeah, actually, you know, it's been my dream since I was a little kid. That's kind of all I wanted to do with my life. And then I lost my way for a while, but yeah." And so he offered for me to do a cover on one of his creator-owned books, which was, it's now Dead Eyes, but before they had a legal thing, and it was called Dead Rabbit, and that was under Image Comics. So I did a cover for that, and he was doing an in-store signing down in at Third Eye Comics in Baltimore, Maryland. And he was like, "Let me see if I'm sure they'd be happy to have you come down, because I did a variant cover for them." You know, so I went down and, you know, did a in-store signing with Jerry, and I had the whole experience, and I was like, "Well, yep, that's it. This is what I want to do with my life. I want to do comics." So I did another variant cover for Dead Eyes / Dead Rabbit. And then I got to, Will Dennis, who is the editor for Dead Eyes, was, you know, we followed each other on Instagram, and he posted, you know, the cover I did, and I was like, "Oh, that's actually my first comic work." And he was like, "Oh, all right, well, I'll talk to some people." So he sent my website portfolio around to some people. Boom Studios was one of them, and I got an email just kind of randomly one day, and Boom Studios asked me to do a cover for their Buffy reboot. And I was a huge Buffy fan, so I knew the universe really well. And I had actually done some previous illustration work on Buffy books, non-comic books, but, you know, for some books through a publisher called Inside Editions. So they were really happy with that work, and then they offered me the variant cover run on their Angel series.
Oh, that's just check marks, man. That's just like check. I'm a huge fan of the franchise, the Buffyverse, I guess they call it now. Like, huge fan of that too. That's why that would be a dream come true. That had to be.
Yeah, it absolutely was. I was like, I mean, I would draw a cover for any comic book just because it's comics and I love it and I'm obsessed with it. But then it was, you know, a property that I'm so familiar with and I think is so cool. And, you know, they're super nice to work with. They're awesome people, all the editors over there. You know, and they were like, "Hey, we're doing a demon variant." You know, like it was just demon characters from the series. And I was like, "Oh my God, it's just, it's, doesn't get any more perfect for me." So I get to draw monsters, you know, for a cover for every month.
And the inner Scott was screaming with joy. And then below the inner childhood Scott was like, "Yeah."
Yeah.
Oh, exactly. Man. I mean, because it is such an iconic franchise, to say the least here. And one, I have to put it out in the ether. I hope to God they don't reboot it. I've heard the rumors down the line. I'm like, no.
Oh,
I've heard some stuff, and I hope to God it's not true, but
we'll see. Who knows?
Yeah, but we enjoy what we have now, and it's also one, I don't think the show is on any, like, Hulu, Netflix, or anything like that, either.
Yeah, when I have to, because before I do a job, I do a lot of preparation work and, you know, gathering reference material and, mm-hmm. and stuff like that, just making sure I get all the little details correctly. You know, and I had to watch all the episodes through YouTube, not just crappy YouTube videos, like you have to pay to rent them, so they're good quality and everything, but that was the only place that I could find them.
Yeah, other than ordering the DVDs from Amazon.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't, which is weird to me, because it's such a big thing and such an iconic franchise, and Angel 2 and stuff, you know, like, where is it? I don't know. That's... Fans, yep. You know, there's going to be a fan in the comments that's going to be like, it's on Amazon for free, you idiots. Like,
yeah, it probably is.
It's like, yeah, fair enough. I get it. So I don't check all the time.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's like, well, who is your favorite character, do you think, in the two? Or just in either one. Like, who do you think in the Buffyverse is yours? Because I have mine, and I think we might be similar on this one. So I'm curious.
It's tough. You know, I always like the bad guys the best.
Yeah,
you know,
villain's
so
cool. Villains are always cool.
I mean, and also kind of I'm drawn to things that I find more aesthetically pleasing, so that would probably be the Master or the Beast.
Yeah.
I mean, out of the main characters, I used to be a super into Spike.
Yeah, that's my man. That is it.
Yeah, but I think, in a weird way, I think Anya is my favorite. Yeah, it's a weird one.
And kind of, that was a childhood crush, but...
Yeah, and that aside.
Yeah, if we take that one out, you know, yeah. That's like, we still got 2% left of epic character. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
But that's still, yeah, Spike, Anya's, see, now we have it's a record store slash kind of like used retail store sort of thing where it's like they sell nerd collectibles and used DVDs or new DVDs and TV series and stuff like that, and also records. And they probably have all the Buffy series right now, and I have to go Christmas shopping, Scott. This is making me just want to say, you know what? I all bought Buffy. We're just going to binge watch it.
Yeah, you know what? The episodes hold up really well.
Oh, they do?
Despite being 15, 20 years old or something, they, you know, they're good. They're really solid.
Buffy and Angel both were made so well, and... when I heard that they were bringing, because I remember years ago, they said, oh, we're bringing the comics in. I'm like, ooh... Or however long it was ago. It seems maybe years ago, but maybe it wasn't. But they're like, oh, the comics. And I think they're a continuation, if I remember right, too.
I don't know. To be honest, I didn't read any of the Dark Horse ones.
What?
So I don't know if that continued off of the, you know, the series, mm-hmm. like the TV storyline or anything like that.
What it was, so it's under Boom now?
I don't know.
Ah, fascinating. Interesting. I'm curious. I kind of want to dive into those.
Yeah.
I got like so many things to binge from guests on the show, and they're like, you got to read Transformers, you got to read G.I. Joe. And I'm like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Well, I don't even have the time to read my own books right now. but yeah, man, that's. So you got to draw those. And by the way, epic pieces for the Buffyverse covers.
Thank you.
To say the least.
Thank you.
Of course. And. It's one of those, and then it was like, oh, he did comics. I'm like, oh, shit. When I was going through your profile, I'm like, oh, he did comics. And I was like, oh, he did Buffy. And I'm like, Scott's got to come on the show. And I sent an email, like, we got it. Because I could geek out for a whole episode about Buffy and, you know, all the aesthetics about that and, you know, Joss Whedon and all this sort of stuff. And I think part of me, and I've been disagreed with, but agreed with more on this statement, Buffy and Angel were ahead of their time.
I think so.
Yeah.
I would agree with you there.
Because, you know, we had that female lead. We had, you know, we had Angel. We had that dark aesthetic sort of thing. I think maybe if you came out with it 6 years later, it would have done. People would have been like, holy shit. And, you know, they still were, but even more, maybe possibly.
Yeah, and, you know, and I think I totally agree with you, because I think that just the fact that they hold up so well, the episodes hold up so well today, like nothing seems terribly outdated, maybe some of the slang or anything, but the themes and stuff and the, you know, the characters it was ahead of its time because it's relevant today. You know, it could fit, it fits really easily right into kind of modern times.
That's true. That's why I hope to, I don't want to jinx it, so there's a reboot. I don't want to do it, Scott. I don't want the world to know.
We'll see. I mean, you know, if there is, I'll go into it with an open mind, and, you know, if I don't like it, I won't watch it.
It's true. It's true. Well, as a guy who likes drawing the style you do with the monsters and stuff like that, is there, because we always have that one thing, like, as a guy, I work in SFX for movies, and I always want to build, like, a Godzilla suit or something like that. Is there something that maybe you want to, like, draw one day? Like, is it, like, a dream? I mean, maybe for a gig. I know you could do it on your own time. But maybe for, like, a comic or something like that. Is there, like, something you really, really want to be able to do? Like, something that's that dream that you're holding out on? Or, like, dream monster character? Maybe it's Conan.
Yeah, you know, that would be nice. You know, well, Jerry Duggan and I are actually doing a book for Image that we're working on right now. I can't talk too much about it.
Yeah, I don't want to get you in trouble.
So, you know, that's kind of, I've been kind of bit by the interior comics bug. Ooh. Like, I just want to, you know, keep developing my skills at doing sequential work. And, you know, I mean, there's so many cool writers out there and so many cool stories to tell. And, you know, like the one Jerry's working on now is just, it's bonkers. And I'm like, this is the greatest. Like, I just love telling stories. Mm-hmm. You know, I love cover work. You know, this is the next phase and kind of where I feel like I want to settle in is comics. Like, I've pretty much done in the short amount of time that I've been drawing professionally. You know, I've kind of ticked off all my bucket lists. Like, I've done, you know, illustrated books for like huge franchises. Like, I've done a lot of Harry Potter work. You know, the Buffy stuff. Yeah, the Harry Potter stuff was crazy. You know, I had a Walking Dead project that got canceled, but I still got to work on that for a while. You know, I've done posters for bands. I did a poster for one of my favorite bands of all time, and, you know, so those little bucket list things get checked off, and as I do things, I'm like, oh yeah, that's cool, I'll probably do it again. But, you know, as I'm moving closer and closer to just doing more and more comic work, I'm like, this is what I want to do. Like, I just want to live comics. Mm. Like, for the rest of my career. But that's kind of, I mean, I'm kind of living the dream right now, is, you know, just continuing on with comic book work.
And obviously you've worked hard for it, though, too. You know, like, that's the thing, is you've worked hard for it, and that's amazing to hear all that stuff. Like, and because you can just keep rolling, and it's like, hey, you know these big franchises? Yeah, I got to work in them.
Weird. It's crazy. It's crazy, especially, you know, how not very long I've been doing this. Mm-hmm. It's just, I think you just get out of it what you put in, you know?
Oh, it's true. If he would have told me there's some Hollywood, and the movie's still not out yet, but I believe it comes out next year. I got to work with some, like, major nerd Hollywood talent for a movie. Last year, and it's just been in a whole year in post-production, you know, to be able to work with those people, and they're like, okay, I'll give a little bit of a hint. They were in the recent Star Wars movies. So, you know, to be able to work with them and get to talk to them and hang out with them and stuff like that, that really, I'm like, fuck. And then my first movie gig, and then after that, and then work in comics. Like, if you would have told childhood me you'd be writing one of the books I write is a giant monster book, I would have been like, you're full of shit. There's just no way. Or I get to write Call Young Power, like an idea that I had since I was 6 years old of like this whole storyline and this whole world sort of thing. And I get to write that in a comic now? Oh, pop off.
Yeah.
There'd be no way. I'd be like, no, fuck you. This is it, like, if you told young Scott all this stuff, who's maybe just managing and doing work, managing a liquor store and telling and just doing a little bit of work on the side, like, Would Young Scott believe you?
Yeah, no, not at all. No. It's weird because, you know, I think a big reason why I think it was like a self-confidence thing. Like, I don't know. I always held comic book creators and, you know, people who just create anything for a living. I was like, that's possible. Like, how do people do that? Whatever. So I was just like, I'm just a working guy, whatever. I'll, you know, take a liquor store job or bartender, whatever. You know, so kind of the first year that I went freelance, I was just like, it wasn't even the jobs I was doing. It was just like, wow, people don't have coworkers. You know, like, so that for like the first year and a half, that was just my big shock that I was like, wow, I don't have to work with anybody who I'm getting mad at that they're totally slacking and I have to pick up their slack, you know? And then it was, you know, and then it started like these big crazy intellectual properties started coming up and I was like, this is crazy. I don't have to work with people and I get to work on this, you know? And then it's like, oh, I get to make money, you know?
I get to eat and do what I love? What?
Yeah, like every, honestly, you know, 5+ years later, I'm just like, every day, I'm just like, I can't believe this is happening. This is so insane to me.
Oh, it's, once the ball's rolling, and I will say from experience, once the ball's rolling, it's so, and as an artist, I've seen it so many times that ball never stops. It can go for years. An artist, as a writer, it stops. But but as an artist, you guys, it always keeps going and going and going. But as a writer, maybe sometimes it stops. I'll give it that. But you know, once that ball's rolling and what you love, what you do, and it starts, it takes that hard push. Because a friend of mine, is a producer, recently we had a talk and was like, hey, we were talking about it's like, you know, we live in the world now where people are going back because everything, the world kind of is iffy right now. And so a lot of the people who maybe are future artists are like, no, it's only work, sleep, eat. That's it. It's all you're going to do in life. And, you know, once you get past that mentality, I think, because if it's really what you want to do, if it's really who you are on the inside, eventually it will still come out. Like in your case, it took years. Yeah. But eventually it will come out. And I think people listen to the show, they always like are looking for that like little helpful stuff. Like, make sure you break yourself that mentality. Other people that are stuck in it will try to bring you down. But fuck, you got to keep going. You got to keep persevering. You got to keep doing what you do. Because they look upon you and you're like, you're a fairy. Like, no, not really.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and I used to, you know, again, I'm 42 or 43 or whatever.
That's
I am.
That's still young.
You know, I mean, you know, getting started in, like, being super green in an industry at 36 years old is kind of like, it's kind of nerve-wracking, you know, it's weird. Like, there's a lot of people out there who, you know, have 20 years on me or something, so it's just, but then you read those, you know, I don't know if you've ever heard those, the stories of, you know, this actor didn't land a major role until they were 44. I think it was like Samuel L. Jackson or something. Didn't, like, he had his major film when he was like 44 years old. And then there's all these, like, J.K. Rowling didn't, you know, have her book published until she was X. So I always kind of looked at those people and I was like, oh, well, it can be done. I mean, it's not going to be me, but that's great for them. And then, you know, I just kind of kept with it and kept, it's a grind, nothing comes easy, and it's, you know, but you keep with it, and, you know, as I said earlier, kind of you get out what you put in, and if you keep with it and stick to it, like, it's not just these A-list people, it's like, it can happen, you know? And again, like I said, I'm a total recluse and I rarely leave the house. And I just, you know, email, cold email all day long, you know, trying to land gigs. But it's work. It doesn't come easy. And you can just kind of grind away and, you know, 100%. Good things will happen.
Oh, 100%. That's currently myself. And also, like, I have so many, and especially on the Film World podcast I host too. You know, as a filmmaker, I wanted to talk about that stuff too and bring on my friends from Hollywood and stuff like that. And on the comic show too, there's been so many of the stories that have been told were the same situation of people in their like 30s that now play Spider-Man villains. You know, they're like, I never thought I'd be anything, but it's like, now I get to play a Spider-Man villain. Or, you know, the people who worked and just did stuff and they never thought they would have, they're like, ah, it won't happen to me. And they just all of a sudden clicks and it goes. Now you're in Godzilla. Yeah. Now you're doing, like, you don't know. That's the beauty of it. And it's frightening to most people, maybe, that are standing by watching. They're like, well, you never know. It's like, no, but it's also kind of the point. You know, you keep working. It's what we love not knowing, you know? We love not having the future set in stone, because if it's set in stone, what the fuck's the point of living, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's exciting. I mean, you know, one nerve-wracking yet exciting part of this job is, you know, I never know what weird email is going to pop up and be like, hey, Scott, I saw your work, or somebody recommended this, you know? Sure. So there's that excitement of like, oh, what next opportunity is around the corner.
My name is Andrew, and I am the host of a show called Rage Hunter. And on Rage Hunter, we cover the latest news and what's trending in the gaming industry with just a hint of some sarcasm and rage. You probably have this hole, you know, this void in your life that you don't know how to fill. Well, Rage Hunter is going to fill it. And the best part is we are everywhere. iTunes, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, Google Play Store, Spotify, Podbean, Instagram, Twitter, so that way you can get as much rage in your life as possible. And some news while you're at it. So come check us out and be a part of the greatest gaming podcast in the universe. See you there.
But it's fun. It's exciting.
Oh, yeah. Like, after this recording, I got to do a few more editing things, and this is like behind the scenes sort of stuff here for listeners. And I'm emailing some pitches to some comic book companies today, and I'm like, oh god, like the nerve-wracking is through the roof right now for these two books that like I've been working for about a month and a half on. And you know, if I don't get it, I don't get it. It's whatever. It's fine. But you know, just even going in and pitching, like, this could really change things if these companies accept it, because they're a lot bigger companies than the one I work for right now. Because I'm working for a startup, SGGS Comics, Love with a Passion, you know. But I'm also sending stuff in because I do want to write full time, you know, writing full time for film, for comics, stuff like that too, you know, and also building props and stuff. But
yeah,
keep working and practicing and take that leap, even though you never know, into darkness, because you don't know what's going to be there. Basically, you're Indiana Jones going over the crevice or into the canyon.
Yeah, and you know, and there is a lot of rejection.
Oh, God, yes.
You know, the first handful of times it stings really bad and makes you doubt your existence at all. And then, you know, and then you just kind of get used to it. Yeah. You get a tough skin. It's just, I mean, of all the, you know, even when I land a job, you know, I'll send in like concept sketches, and it's like, nope, that one sucks. Nope. Yep, this one's okay. So you get used to, you know, just kind of not being beaten down, but just being rejected or not hearing back at all. You know, and you just say, all right, well, whatever. I'm going to keep at it. It's not going to. Nobody's going to see it if it doesn't get put out there by me. You know, and so you just got to go for it, kind
of. It's true. Oh, it's true. And there's a quote from a friend of mine who's been in the movie business for like 30, 40 years. And he says, you know, as an artist, you lose a billion, but you win a million. And those million mean the world to you. It's like, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yep.
You know, you're like, oh, yeah.
Yep.
Wise
words.
Oh my god, yeah. I'm like, that's why you've been around for 40 years and what you're doing. Because you don't have that. Ooh. And I think rejection too, in comics especially, and this basically as an artist, no matter what you do, I think rejection, I always say rejection helps you evolve to make you a better person and make your art better too. So it's like it evolves you and your artwork and your work.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I've been fortunate to work with a lot of really good, you know, editors and creative directors and art directors. Mm-hmm. And my favorite ones are the ones who will, you know, they get the best work out of me. And that's not just by saying, oh, you're doing a nice job. You know, they're just like, okay, this is on the right track. We need to change this. Composition's a little screwy. And you know, you can't take it personally, because it ultimately you want the best product to be put forward. They want the best product, you know, if that's going to catch people's eyes or something. You know, so you can't take it personally. Like, I actually enjoy it. I like it when people point out something that could work better or something like that, you know, because ultimately we all want the same thing, is that is to put out something good that people enjoy.
It's true. Yeah, you mean you want to put it out and you also want to be able to create it, you know, and you want to be able to be like, oh, I don't want this to suck, because if the people don't enjoy it, like you said, oh, you're fucked.
Yeah.
It hurts.
Especially on, you know, if I'm doing a job that is, you know, pretty high profile or something, when there's going to be a lot of eyeballs on it, I want it to be the best thing that I can possibly do in front of people, you know?
Oh, yeah. Now, because we're coming near to the end of the show here, Scott, I do have to let you know of something, because you mentioned before it was Conan, and I just thought about it, and I don't want to lose it again, is, do you know, currently Marvel is publishing a really good Conan series?
Yeah.
Okay. I just want to make sure. Like, so I'm like, Scott, maybe you want to read this if you're, like, if you're reading all that.
Yeah, I'm all over it. And it's funny because Jerry Duggan was writing, I think it was Savage Sword.
Yes.
And so it's like it came full circle in a weird way. You know, I'm working with him, and that was kind of my first foray into or discovering comics when I was, you know, in like the mid-1980s was old Conan stuff. And it's crazy. I love it, and I love the series. I love everything that Conan's in. I love so he had Savage Sword, and he's in Savage Avengers now too. Yes. Which is super cool.
Oh god, I never, if you would have told me Conan would be on an Avengers team, I'd be like, you're on crack.
Yeah,
no.
it makes so much sense.
It's true.
Like, I love the, like, you know, the bro stuff. It's like, you know, Conan and Punisher hanging out and, like, traversing through the Arctic, and, you know, and then he's hanging out with Dr. Doom. I'm just like, yeah, this guy fits in kind of in a weird way.
And he was on, before that, he was on a different Avengers team too. So he's been on, like, two so far in the past 2 years, so it's like, what the fuck? Like, and him, like, calling Scarlet Witch, like, witch lady, like, fair enough.
Yeah.
That's going in. Yeah, that's going in.
Yeah.
Like, crazy witch lady, I will help you. Like, you.
Yeah, it's awesome. I want Conan everywhere.
Oh my god, I'm not gonna lie, I've always been an okay fan of Conan. But I loved the stuff before. I really did dig it. I thought that Conan's a badass. And these recent books have really put me forward to, like, okay, let's do another Conan movie or show.
Yeah.
Please.
Yeah.
Or MCU Conan at this point. Please. It would be amazing. Oh, I'd kill.
That would be great.
Oh, yeah. We live in a world now where, like, Shang-Chi is a thing. So it's like, come on. Like, Iron Fist is a thing. Like, let's, come on. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, I bet they will at some point. It's just, I do like how they're going, you know, kind of what they do with, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy, and now they're doing with the Eternals, like, kind of, not lesser known, well, I guess lesser known to, like, just kind of casual fans or something, but, you know, I like how they're kind of developing these, and Shang-Chi, too, you know, like, lesser known things. But I would assume that we'd see a nice, meaty, like, bloody Conan reboot at some point in the future.
Oh, I'm betting on it. I'm severely betting on it.
Yeah, and I can't wait. Oh.
Did you, do you remember Harold and Kumar?
Yeah.
You know one of the actors is going to be in the Eternals, right?
Yeah, I saw a picture of him yesterday.
Yeah,
he's totally jacked.
That's what I was getting to, because I really wanted to give that actor a shout out. I can't remember his name at the moment.
It's Kumail Nanjiani. I'm probably mispronouncing the last name, but Kumail.
Shout out to that dude, because he went from, like, you're this classic funny nerd to be like, I'm in Marvel, and he became like Mr. Steal Your Girl so fast.
Yeah, I read a brief, you know, blurb, I think he posted on Twitter or his Instagram, but he was like, you know, I got a role a year ago and I wanted to look like I was going to be in a Marvel film, so he's just been working super hard for the past year with, like, a trainer and nutritionist, and he got jacked. And I'm like, that's awesome. That's super awesome dedication.
Oh, yeah.
And he takes it super seriously, and I'm like, that's great. That is fantastic.
You know what that proved to me, Scott? That proved to me one fact. Is when he said that too, I'm like, wow, I'm never going to be in a Marvel movie.
Yeah.
Because I'm like looking at myself like, oh, fuck.
Yeah. Yeah, same here. Yeah. So, like, maybe I'll draw something related to a Marvel movie, but, you know, I'm never going to look the part.
Oh, here's the dream for you, Scott. And I may, like, we got to connect it full circle. Yeah, because you have things come full circle more than a math class. Really, you do a, so Conan's happening, right? So we get a Conan movie or TV show, and you get to do the poster.
Ugh, how nuts would that be?
Or even the new Conan series. You get to be, that you get to make the poster that's going to be promoted all around before it comes out.
Yeah.
Or even the book,
my brain would just, you know, shred on, like, a molecular level and just explode.
What happened to Scott? I think he's having a stroke, but he's just sitting there drooling at his table.
Yeah. He's been non-responsive for 3 weeks now.
Oh, Jesus.
Staring in the corner.
Well, I mean, it's a way to do it. Now, before I let you go, because I do like asking this of artists these days, and any artist I have on the show now, it's the thing I started asking because people get very curious. And, you know, it's something where I'm personally curious myself. So, Scott, as an artist, do you do digital drawing, or is it still you're doing pen on paper?
About 4 years ago, I switched to 100% digital.
Okay.
And the reason for that is just speed. When I started off illustrating, I would do, you know, pen and ink stuff, scan it in, but for a lot of, you know, things with likenesses, particularly, they'll need a lot of changes. Like, I'm not a likeness specialist, so I wouldn't nail it on the first shot all the time. So there's a lot of changes. You know, if you're working for a book, you know, say Harry Potter or something, it goes to, like, the art director, then it goes up to Warner Brothers, and then the actors have to sign off on the likeness, and then all the way back down. So just for speed, if I had to make changes, it's just easier digitally. And now with all the crazy brushes that they come out with, it's just, there's probably no going back. Although I will say real quick, it's, I've started adding traditional, like, I make time for just doing pen and ink stuff on my own, because I have found that since switching to digital years ago, I've lost a lot of deliberate strokes when I draw, because you always have Control Z and you can undo indefinitely. So when you draw with pen and ink or even pencil, you stop, and it's almost mindfulness. Like, you stop and you think about what mark you're gonna make, and then you make it. And, you know, sure, you erase, but you still, even if you're erasing a lot, it's still not as much as I hit Control Z. Oh. So I find that when, now that I've brought traditional drawing back into the mix, just as an exercise, that when I go and do my digital work, I'm a lot more deliberate, and my mark making is, you know, a little more thought out, and I take a second and make sure that, you know, I'm putting the mark in the right place. So.
Okay. All right. See, I'm not an artist, so this is, like, really fascinating to me to hear about, because we live in that new digital age of stuff where I think sooner or later it's all artwork's going to probably, well, 99% of artwork's going to go to digital. So I like to hear about it from, like, people who use it, who are artists all the time, you know, like, well, what's happening here? Like, I that's fascinating to hear. I mean, Todd McFarlane from Image, Todd McFarlane, I'm like exhausted. Todd McFarlane, he does his online streaming stuff every day on Facebook, right? And he does stuff with, he always says digital on there. And I've noticed that because it all of a sudden does seem like he does it incredibly fast. I'm like, well, maybe it's because it's him. People are commenting, like, no, he's doing digital and stuff. Like,
Yeah, it's just, and you know, and I say fast for more in a workflow sense, like as opposed to, you know, the scanning and this and that and whatever. It's just, it's easier to create a canvas and have like, you know, for say a comic cover, for example, you know, you create a canvas, you can, the software I use, you can plug in the exact measurements of like the trim and bleed and all that stuff and mask off that area. So just stuff like that, it just improves my workflow time. You know, I estimate I save about 20 minutes on the hour.
Oh shit.
You know, yeah, so it's crazy, and it adds up. You know, and I've always tried to, I've built and work hard to maintain a reputation for, you know, with my clients for being fast and on time and efficient and doing good work. So, and I haven't messed that up yet, and I think it's just because I can fight. If they're like, hey, can I have this little change? I'm like, yeah, I'll have it for you in 5 minutes. You know, and just be able to fire stuff off as quickly as I can tweak it, you know?
Yeah, I love it. I love it with a passion. Now, we are at the end of the show here, Scott, because I don't want to take too much of your time today, man. But, like, I want to say, first of all, thank you for coming on the show. This has been really entertaining and really fun.
Yeah, thank you for having me. This was, I had a good time.
Ooh. And before I let you go, too, I do want to ask, like, is there anything you want to promote? Because I like promoting fellow artists and such like that. Anything you want to promote, man?
Just my Instagram, Scott Bon, at Scott Bon, S-C-O-T-T-B-U-O-N, and my website is scottbon.com. So, but that's about it.
Sweet. That works for me. And folks, if you want to follow me, you can follow me at DakotaMorgan3 on Twitter or at Dakota_Morgan97 on Instagram. And yeah, Scott, thank you for coming on the show, man. I could have you. We could literally go about Conan, a whole Conan episode, to say the least.
Yeah,
or even a whole
Conan
Buffy episode.
Oh. Yeah.
Either they're like, why did he do a full Conan episode? You might not even get that many listens. It will be fun. No, it really would.
Yeah. That would be awesome.
All right. Alrighty, and all the listeners and comic fans out there, stay classy, barbarians.